Worcester Culture Watch, a podcast connecting you with the local culture scene in Worcester. Arts, entertainment, music, and more.
Worcester Culture Watch from the Worcester Telegram and Gazette.
Hello and welcome to Worcester Culture Watch on Telegram.com. I'm Victor Infante, entertainment editor for the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. Later on in the program, I'll be talking to reporter Richard Duckett. But first, I'm here with reporter Craig Seaman. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Victor. A long time no see.
I know. Well, we are. What you don't see out there in the listener land is that we are back in a real, semi-real studio with these things and not like in the middle of a newsroom hoping nobody comes in and makes noise.
Yes, we're definitely back bigger than ever.
We are back. And so this is going to be a lot more comfortable and a lot less jumpy. oh, goodness gracious. We've just started and we've already gone off the rails.
Yeah, okay, instead of a broom closet, now we're in a water closet? Or?
No. Let's keep this in good taste. And speaking of good taste and jokes, you've been up to some funny business lately.
Yes. I just had a big story Sunday, which I was working on for a little time, piecemeal type work, and is political correctness ruining comedy? That is the question I asked several national and local comedians. And why political correctness was not always accused as being the culprit, social media was often blamed as being a game changer and possible career ender. Now more than ever, and you've seen this, Victor, I'm sure, mm-hmm. Comedians have had to apologize about things they have tweeted or posted, or for leaked material from their stand-up acts that have made it on social media without their permission.
Yeah, and it's so funny because it's such a morass of separate issues,
right?
That kind of get all lumped together because the world moves in fast forward these
right.
days. Just as a disclaimer, and I know this is an opinion that was shared by some people in your stories. I actually don't like the phrase political correctness.
Okay, fair enough.
Personal. Every time I see political correctness, I see somebody who's looking for an excuse to be a jerk. Okay. It's kind of like the all lives yeah. matter of
right.
comedy or
right.
whatever, or political commentary. It's the, I'm an equal opportunity offender, but, you know, we're really kicking a few people a little harder.
I had a big argument yesterday about political correctness. And they were talking all politics, and I said, political correctness has nothing to do with politics.
No.
But they were under the impression it did. And they were harping on that Kathy Griffin thing, which mm-hmm. was a political satire, according to her.
Sure.
But I'm like, and after like 10 minutes of this argument I couldn't win, I'm like, political correctness has nothing to do with politics.
No. No, in fact,
and I try to stay away from that in the story.
Yeah, and I mean, the Kathy Griffin thing came up. It was such a weird and compelling
yeah.
moment. With for those who were unfamiliar, she did a satirical bit which included the severed head of
yeah.
the 45th president of the United States. Yeah, I can see where some people got upset on that.
I mean, I come from the school personally, and I try to keep myself out of the story. Hopefully, I did.
I think you did.
If you laugh, it's funny. You can always be ashamed at what you're laughing at later.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, you can't deny a laugh. If you laugh, it's funny.
Yeah.
If you're uncomfortable, uneasy, outraged, that's a different thing. With the Kathy Griffin thing and Frank Foley, who's across the street at XLL Morning Show, who did
yep.
a great job in the story. He like him, like myself, we're not big fans of her.
Mm.
But my take and his take is pretty much, should you kind of almost lose your career over something like that?
That is probably an overreaction.
Yeah, I mean, as I, one thing I had in the original story, which I cut out because of length, and you know how length can be for a story.
Yeah.
I mean, that my story was really...
That was a pretty lengthy story there.
Yes, thankfully it was, they had the room, but I mean, originally I had a 115-inch story. And that's without Orlando Baxter and Lenny Clark in it.
Oh, goodness
and
gracious.
And I got it down to 85 with both of them in there.
Yeah, and those are two voices you really want in that story.
Lenny Clark was actually kind of the catalyst for the story
mm-hmm.
because Lenny was the first, and I explained this to Lenny, and God bless him, he did get back to me. Lenny was the one that I wanted the most and first, even though I got him second to last, because he did a routine 45 days after the marathon bombing at the Boston Garden about the marathon bombers.
Yeah.
And the initial reaction was people walking around like, my God, what? How can he be going here too soon? And then moments later, people were laughing riotously because it was funny.
Indeed.
And as I explained to Lenny, you know, you're a Boston guy. This is your city. You love the city. Obviously, there was no malice or ill will to it. And it was, it was a very clever, smart routine. And if it was anything else, he would not have done it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, especially with a routine like that, with Lenny Clark and a comedian like that, that sort of laughter and that sort of moment can do a lot of healing. I mean, yes. Which is what happened.
And as I explained to him, I mean, he's playing this to the front rows. Half the people in the front row had no arms, were missing limbs.
Yeah.
Because they were survivors. And sometimes we forget, I mean, three people, God rest their souls, passed on that day. But there was a lot of lives
shattered. Irrevocably scarred.
Yeah. And I worked that day, which was supposed to be a normal day. And when you start seeing the unfiltered photos coming through, it's not images you don't want, images you wish to see.
No.
And, God bless him. He did a great routine. It was funny. It was a routine that was like first time he really did it. And as he said to me, his brother who's been his manager for decades, took a picture of him right before he went on. And you could just see the fear in his eyes. Because this could have been a make or break.
Oh, yeah.
A moment, but then again, he realized what he had.
Yeah, and I really want to make a point here. There's a difference between a comedian such as Lenny Clark, who is very skilled
right
at what he does. Not everybody could have done that.
Most comedians
would have bombed.
Very few people could. Yeah, and besides the fact they would have been uncomfortable in their own skin doing it, it would have been trite, or it would have been tacky or insensitive.
And this has always been my point with, I'm kind of in the category of a lot of people in your story, including Orlando Baxter. I was always glad to see him in there.
Yeah, I'm glad
local boy
back.
Done good.
I'm glad, and he actually just came back from I think a yacht cruise.
Yeah,
he was
on the yacht.
And he was filling in 4 days for the guy that was married to Drew Barrymore for a minute.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
The Canadian guy. At Foxwoods, so he was really jet-lagged, but show what a great guy he is, and loyal to our paper, and loyal to Worcester. He made a point to talk.
That's greatly appreciated. He was a great voice in the story, but there's a sort of, I think anything is fair game in comedy, personally.
I agree.
But there's a difficulty bar.
Yeah.
And you've got to be way up here, way, way, way at the top to handle some of the material.
Well, I mean, you got to realize, know. It's like Clint Eastwood once said in one of the Dirty Harry movies, a man has to know his limitations.
Exactly.
Just because you can talk about it. I mean, as John Cleese said at the Hanover when he was here a few years back, he says, there's a lot of clever people. There's very few funny people.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who can take a routine, say, from Chris Rock.
Yeah.
And that same sort of material, it would not be funny in other people's hands.
Correct. I mean, it has a lot to do with nuances, delivery, and the smarts.
Yeah.
The smarts put behind it.
Exactly.
And, I got a little bit into Louis C.K., and he was one of the guys.
And that is a different situation in a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, the leaked tape.
Yes.
Not his personal stuff, right? Yeah. That's not for me to comment about. He obviously has issues.
Indeed.
To put it mildly. But, I find it very scary that people can lose their jobs. I mean, you had the situation, and I did talk to Gilbert a little bit at a panel about this, because he's probably one of the most notorious ones.
This is comedian Gilbert Godfrey.
Gilbert Godfrey, and I'm not that close to him to be called
Gilbert. I call him Gilbert.
Yeah. Me and Gil, we're hanging out, and
we're just chilling.
Yeah, we're doing Dracula impersonations, and he lost a very lucrative deal.
With Affleck.
Affleck, because he made some, I'll say it, made tasteless jokes that weren't funny.
Yeah.
I mean, they were kind of, you saw the punchline a mile away. after the big earthquake tsunami that killed, I think it was 200,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
A ridiculous number in the magnitude, not in the...
Yeah.
And the thing happened on a Friday. He made the tweets on a Saturday and Sunday, and Monday he lost his job. I think he apologized Monday and then Tuesday. So he lost his job really quick. And I think he should have known better, but then again, he's an outrageous comedian.
Mm-hmm. And Affleck should, in my opinion, have, you know, thought about who they were hiring.
Yeah, I mean, this is not like this guy is very prominent in the Aristocrats video, which is
a
great video if you guys can handle it. I mean, it's an NC-17 movie.
And it's all
language. I mean, it's a documentary and the dirtiest joke ever. And all comedians, it's like a secret society. All comedians know this joke, and they have their own spin on it. And the thing is, you try to outdo the other comedians by making it filthier and filthier. Yeah. And he probably has the filthiest one.
By miles.
on there. So, I mean, this is Gilbert. I mean, this is what he does. But Gilbert, one thing he said, I mean, he still looks shell-shocked from this thing. And this thing happened, I think, a decade earlier. And he's like, and one thing he said, which was very funny and very true, it made him nostalgic for the days of the lynch mob, because at least they got their hands dirty when they destroyed someone. Now you got someone in their basement that's, you know, tweeting. And his take was the fact that he felt that there's actually people there out there that take it as a badge of honor if they're offended by something. They can go up there and say, and I think there are people like that, because I think a lot of these people say they're offended by things. Why are you this offended?
Well,
a stupid joke. Let's go on.
And Nikki Lucarelli, in your story, made a really good point. Local comedian and songstress Nikki Lucarelli.
The one and only.
The one and only. She made a really good point about you've got to be very careful about not silencing marginalized voices in this. And that in this discussion of it's just a joke, get over it. Because jokes have been used to oppress people.
Right.
Historically. They have been used to put people in their place.
Right.
A lot, I won't say all of it, but a lot of my opinion of people who are taking exception to, I'm using air quotes now, political correctness has been people who are mad that they don't get to tell racist jokes anymore or sexist jokes anymore. I think not everybody, and clearly not everybody, I don't think anybody in your story.
Yeah.
But there, you hear that voice. I kind of want to separate.
If that's the case,
I want to separate that out from the rest because, outrage culture can be kind of fast and furious, and there is a lot to really be outraged in the world. I'm not sure everything that gets attacked, as it were, online deserves it.
I think we're being. And those are valid points.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no room for racism.
No.
Sexism, they're really not, especially in today's day and age.
No.
And we've definitely taken major turns in the positive on that. But sometimes it seems like people are looking for a reason to be offended. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're looking for things that aren't even there.
Yeah, there are times I'm just kind of looking at something that's blowing up on Twitter, and I'm like, I don't actually get it. I mean, even there's... I think it is so much more important now to stop and think before reacting these days to anything on the internet, because so much is just not true.
Right. You know? Absolutely.
I mean, my favorite, and oh my God, I'm going to defend the president. This is a moment. This is a moment, you know. This never happens.
Victor defending the president.
There is, and he rightly responded. Now the president shouldn't be getting into tweet wars with Bette Midler. I've actually met Bette Midler. She's one of the most lovely people I've ever met.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she used to be a customer of mine when I was a kid at working at a 7-Eleven.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was.
Where was that? Orange County?
Yeah, Laguna Beach, California.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
What was her order? Did she buy?
She bought Slurpee or sometimes fruit juice and nuts.
Did you get an extra squirt?
No, it's all self service, man.
Oh, okay.
And after that, I worked at a bookstore in the same town. She used to come in all the time. She was great.
And she like, where's my Slurpee? Kid?
Yeah, I think she did actually. but off track. There is this thing going around, a false quote that was said to have come from People magazine about the president saying, if I was going to run for president, that, you know, supposedly said back in the 80s, I would run as a Republican because they're stupid or something like that.
Okay.
He never said it. It does not appear in the magazine. It does not appear in the record transcripts.
So People magazine made it up?
No, somebody else made it up and put it out there and keeps attributing it to People magazine, and it keeps popping up. And it's easily disproved. You just go to Snopes and they've got a whole thing on it. But it's one of those things that just keeps coming up. And there's plenty to criticize the president on. There's plenty to criticize any politician on.
Right.
But let's stick to real things. Because he never said that. And so we've got this outrage. Again, another blast of outrage culture about this. And, well, I'm no fan of the target.
Right.
You know, it's like, stop, think.
Right.
You know, is this real? Because the fact is, we live in a world now where we have to ask, is this real?
Well, absolutely. Whenever I have an argument, they said this about this. I'm like, but who said this?
Yeah.
Where are you getting this from?
Yeah, exactly.
And then they say, it's like, have you ever heard of that source of news before today? I never heard of them. Who are they? Where do they exist? What, you know, are they in Butte, Montana? I mean, come on.
I know. It's like...
No offense to Butte, Montana.
But, you know, it's like, you know, most of this, you know, it's... People have put out a lot of junk, basically. Some of it is we can attribute to Russian disinformation campaigns or whatever, but some of it's just jerks.
Now, you might not remember this, but before social media, and we're talking...
I do remember before social...
I'm
47, man.
In the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. We didn't have social media, obviously. No. And the only ones that could make or break a comedian's career were Ed Sullivan and Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And two most famous instances, Jackie Mason was banned on the Ed Sullivan Show before both our times, actually, for allegedly giving Ed Sullivan, who was the most powerful guy in Hollywood at the time, the finger. After he was told to wrap up his act. And don't worry, I won't give you that if you tell me to wrap up this. And Joan Rivers was being banned for life for Johnny Carson after she took a job.
Hosting another show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in both cases, it really had nothing to do with the act. But now you got people not to be on either side of Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Kevin Hart stepped away from a coveted Academy Award gig after a series of old tweets.
Old tweets, which he had already apologized for.
2009 to 2011.
Yeah.
And, I mean, any comedian, I mean, besides, before the biggest thing was to wish for the Tonight Show host.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's still the coveted thing.
I don't think so.
It was for a long time. But then again, we're talking when there was three networks.
Now there's a ton of late night hosts.
But I mean, the Academy Award gig is, I mean, that's equivalent to the halftime of the Super Bowl for a musical act. And like you said, Kevin Hart profusely apologized when he said it.
It was a little after, but yeah.
Okay, but he apologized.
But it was years ago.
He apologized for it. I mean, he's a comedian. Okay, people want to argue. I won't even get into the context of the tweet. But, I mean, it's amazing. Something like that.
Sure. And the fact of the matter is, what drives me crazy about this and about the internet is everybody thinks they're starting at the beginning of the story.
Right.
In real time, Kevin Hart said a bunch of stupid things, stupid homophobic things on the internet. Okay, whatever. Apologized profusely. Has talked openly about having a change of heart since then, and often unprompted.
Yeah.
That he's had a, you know, shifting position because he's had more exposure to people.
I mean, how old is the guy, 40?
Yeah.
So he was 30 when he said it, 20, late 20s?
Yeah, yeah.
Not that's a free pass.
No. I mean, it was pretty bad. But that being said, you know, without taking an opinion out, that's where we are at the story.
Right.
That this has all happened and that there was a process of apologizing and now Ellen loves him and, you know, all of these. And who are we to disagree with Ellen DeGeneres? But people came in on that story thinking they were at the beginning.
Right.
And it's like, well, all this else has happened. No, but he said this then. It's like, well, I said a lot of stupid things in the 90s. I was stoned for some of it. I don't remember.
I mean, I kind of have somewhat of a rule not to leave a paper trail when it comes to stupid things.
Yep.
Hopefully, I've been okay on that. I mean, I do like to tweet, but I do. Mm-hmm. I will sit on a tweet for a little while, and there's something that don't make it because. And I don't touch anything political after, I think, after the first 6 months of their current regime.
Yeah.
I stopped doing political stuff because I was amazed how people would react, no matter what side you were
on.
It's like, okay. And even Lenny Clark said that. He won't do anything political. As soon as you say something political, you lose half the room.
It's a high bar.
Yeah.
It's a really high bar. I mean, not everybody can be Stephen Colbert, you know? Right.
And even Lewis Black, who called me actually called me shortly after his 101-year-old father died.
Yeah.
So God bless him. God bless them both. And I know Lewis was gracious to talk to me a few minutes. But he says, you know, he doesn't like talking about Trump. He's a New Yorker. And Lewis Black is a New Yorker, and he talked about Trump for 40 years. So he had his full of Trump. I mean, he was, and now, as he said, you know, in his career, Lewis has made fun of every president who's sat in why he's been a comedian. We're talking probably 40 years of presidents. And he hasn't treated them any differently. But now it's become such a divide.
Yeah,
but that's not necessarily political correctness.
No, regarding. Jay Leno Jay Leno went off on a tirade a while back about, oh, you've got to be political now. It's all got to be, you know, you used to be able to not hide your politics. To which John Oliver, the next week on his show, played that clip and then did a rundown of almost every Monica Lewinsky joke that he told for over years.
Oh, yeah.
Years. I mean, so, yeah, it's like, yeah, sometimes people are complaining and sometimes people are like, maybe you're romanticizing.
Now, you probably remember this because you might have still been on the West. Were you on West Coast during O.J. Simpson time?
Oh, yeah.
So,
I remember the traffic.
Yeah, my sister is walking distance from the restaurant because she lived in Darlington County, that area, but at the time. But if you remember, I mean, very strange thing because we're talking about a double homicide, no matter whatever side of the coin you were on.
Of course.
I mean, a gruesome, grisly double homicide. And what made Jay Leno go through the roof in the ratings was when he started mocking the stuff with the dancing Itos and the trial stuff.
Yeah.
And at the same time, on the other station, Letterman wasn't touching it at all because he said, I don't find anything funny about a double homicide. But, I mean, it became such a carnival, and there was always that carnival aspect to that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's strange on what some people. I don't know how I got off to that.
Well, it's just like, yeah, it's just like, sometimes people's protestations of political correctness today are a little disingenuous.
Yeah, and real quick, people I did reach out for the story, which unfortunately didn't get back to me for whatever reason, Jerry Seinfeld, which would have been great, especially
I don't
now.
Think he does interviews anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, and I was told the thing about him not doing colleges is actually, according to Steve Martin, who was interviewed, but I cut out of the story. How many people cut Steve Martin out of the story?
I know.
Said that was fake news, and Seinfeld actually did not say he won't do colleges now. I don't know if that's true. But Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer, Bill Maher, who was a flat-out no, Kathy Griffin. Louis C.K.
He's not doing interviews right now.
Chewy Goldman, Kathleen Madigan, Jimmy Tingle, I almost had, but he was busy, and Whitney Cummins.
Yeah, and a few others. Some good people there.
Yeah, but I'm happy with the list that I got.
Okie doke. Well, is there anything else that we should add?
Cause no, I think we're good.
If you haven't read the story, go to telegram.com and read it. It is really worth the read. Great job. Really, really interesting and thought-provoking.
Yeah, and discuss it, people. I think it's a topic to discuss.
Definitely. All right, we'll be back with more in a moment, but right now, here's a classic Worcester band, New Pilot. It's too late for running.
is the sum of the weight about you when we're through. What about our plans?
And we're back. You have been listening to Stuttering by New Pilot. Now, if you haven't yet checked out Matt Soper, frontman of New Pilot, has a series that he's been running at Starlight called Songwriter's Mind, where he brings not only brings in great musicians to play, but they actually interviews them about the process of songwriting. So that's really cool. And there's a lot of clips on that online. All right. That being said, we're back. I'm here with reporter Richard Duckett. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Victor.
So what do you got going on with us this week?
Well, it's that time of year finally now where we can actually get out and go to some outdoor events. I was at the Albanian Festival last weekend doing a story, and so I thought I'd just give you a quick rundown, a quick snapshot of some of the things, by no means all of them that are going on, upcoming. To start with the most venerable one, the Massachusetts Symphony Orchestra Summer Concert Series. It's the 69th for them.
Wow.
And They will have been 25 years at Cristoforo Colombo Park, or East Park. On Shrewsbury Street, with their holiday concerts. So the 25th holiday concert is actually going to be on July 2nd with the orchestra, vocalist Jane Shivak, who's excellent, the choral group Vox Omnis. They're going to perform the usual American composers' repertoire, but also they're going to be having some songs from Hamilton as well.
Oh, fun.
And then the concert will conclude with fireworks. It's the biggest fireworks display usually in the city of the year. And they've also got concerts coming up at Institute Park on July 7th. That's their annual salute to Disney. And July 14th, which is their Magically Mozart program. So no less venerable is Indian Ranch, which returns this summer, beginning June 15th with Lee Bryce.
That's a good start. Good start for country fans there.
Well, I'm sure the beer will be flowing at least on stage for
Indeed.
That one. He's got hits like Drinking Class and Parking Lot Party. So. So the season is heavy with the country acts, as you might expect for Indian Ranch, but they've also got some other interesting shows. There's Melissa Etheridge on June 29th.
That's the exciting one there.
Yeah, she was in Worcester at Hanover, June 2017. She's gone Memphis with her music recently. Also coming up at Indian Ranch will be Cheap Trick, still going after all these years. Get the Lead Out, which is very good, Led Zeppelin tribute band.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got country staples like the Charlie Daniels band.
Oh, it's not the Indian Ranch series without Charlie Daniels. He really isn't.
No, he's been there many times now. They've also got Dwight Yoakam. He's a regular. And now they've got their Samuel Slater's restaurant at Indian Ranch.
And too. I'm really interested to see how that, because there have been times where I've been kind of get there early and just kind of kicking around. I think that might actually be nice to have a place to sit and have a real meal.
Yeah, I haven't actually been to the restaurant, but I've heard lots of good things about it.
Excellent.
So, another festival that's a lot newer is the Winchendon Music Festival, but it's an interesting one, and it's fourth year, and it continues actually June 7th and 8th and 9th with a variety of concerts, including jazz. Then there's Beth Behea Cohen, who is a violinist, who plays music of Syrian, Jewish, and Russian heritage. There's on June 9th, there's folk singer Chris Moyes. Then later on, the festival on June 28th has Jennifer Ash, soprano. June 29th, Randall Scotting, who's a countertenor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's world music Sunday, June 30th. So that's an interesting series. Now, it's been 10 years now since Out to Lunch.
It got feels like going, it's still a new series, but it's been 10 years.
On Worcester Common, yeah. So that includes farmers markets, so there's food, arts and crafts, and 10 performers, 10 weeks, beginning June 10th with King Warble. And then upcoming will be some familiar names such as Dale LePage, Nick Luparelli, Crocodile River Music, the Worcester Jazz Collective.
Those are all going to be fun shows, I think. Those are great for outdoors and on a hot middle of a hot summer day.
Yeah. I'm still trying to get details about the other park concerts, but rest assured there will be an unparked concert series, and I gather that One of the acts will be Chuck and Mudd celebrating 40 years on June 27th.
Indeed, indeed. And I know we're going to have more on that coming up in the near future. But yeah, no, that, it's amazing how some of these acts have just 40 years. This is unthinkable.
I know.
It's incredible. You know, they become such a part of the fabric of the cultural community.
Right, right. A new, brand new event is going to be the Central Mass Jazz Festival on June 22nd at Cristoforo Colombo Park again, or East Park. This has an interesting lineup, including artists such as Mike Renzi, who's quite famous. Jim Porcella, Pamela Hines. It's a fundraiser for WCCA TV. So it'll be interesting to see how it does. There have been other jazz festivals that have come and gone here.
Indeed. Or come and gone and come back in at least one case.
Well, I was going to say that. I was going to say that the Jazz at Sunset has been revamped now. Behind the Hanover Theater. It used to be at the Equitarium for many years, but came to an end, was silent for a couple of years. There was an attempt to revive it elsewhere, but now for the third year, it's going to be behind the Hanover Theater, and they're going to be... It's going to feature Dwight and Nicole on July 12th and Michael Duchera and the Strictly Sinatra Band on August 2nd.
And those look like those are going to be great shows there. I do always find it odd that it's only two shows. It feels like they should always be three. There's something about two that's odd.
Yeah, well...
Or even, I suppose.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's a question of how much support these things can get.
Fair.
As I mentioned, we've had other jazz festivals that were going to be here, organizers said, for years to come, but you never heard from them after the first festival.
Well,
jazz is tricky. I mean, Worcester has an old jazz, well, mostly jazz radio station, and its followers are very devoted, but
yes.
It is minority appeal, getting that crossover audience can be difficult.
Tricky.
Difficult sometimes. There are a couple of other diverse festivals coming up at Elm Park. There's the 8th annual Day of Play Family Festival, which has a lot of activities, including storytelling, dancing, and constructive activities for children.
That sounds like fun.
You don't always have to be constructive, though, and there is the Big Dipper Ice Cream Festival.
I think that's very constructive.
Coming up at Elm Park.
I construct
June 22nd.
Large.
That's always a popular event.
Indeed. And there we go. We've got a lot coming up looking for. And that doesn't even lead us into the big festival season at the end of summer or beginning of fall. So there's a lot to look forward to in the near future here in Worcester and a lot of good reasons to be outside. But, you know, it's a lovely day out today. So hopefully we'll get to do some of that even without prompting today. All right. Thank you much, Richard, for joining us. You have been listening to Worcester Culture Watch. For more, read our arts and entertainment coverage in the Worcester Telegram and Gazette and online at telegram.com. As always, our music was composed by DJ Manipulator. Thanks, and we'll be back next week.